Honorable United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good afternoon. Today, the conference room at Fort Riley, Kansas has been transformed into a federal courthouse. We are grateful to General Wiggins, Colonel Arnold, and the staff of the 1st Infantry Division in Fort Riley for the thoughtful and careful planning in making the arrangements for our visit. We welcome the men and women of the Armed Forces who are here today, members of the bar, and the public to these proceedings. We shall now proceed to oral argument in United States against Miller, and we shall hear first from counsel for appellant. Counsel, you may proceed.
Good afternoon. Chief Judge Efron, honorable members of the court, I am Captain Lance Wood, and along with Captain Sorrell, we represent the appellant in this case, Staff Sergeant Miller. Your Honors, there is a violation of Article 134, which perfectly describes the conduct which appellant committed. It is indecent exposure. What he did fulfills those elements of that offense to a T. The government simply mischarged this case. Instead, appellant was charged with attempted violation of Article 134, indecent acts or liberties with a child, where no contact occurred when he appeared on a webcam masturbating. He sent that video to an undercover police officer who he believed was a 14-year-old girl. The pivotal element of indecent acts or liberties with a child in this case, that's element C, requires that the accused commit the act in the presence of the person. Therefore, the question before this honorable court is whether presence means actual or constructive. This element should be interpreted to mean in the physical presence of the person.
Now, the CCA focused on the issue of attempt. Rather than 134, it said, the appellant's real-time conversation and his live feed broadcast were sufficient to satisfy the presence element of indecent liberties, at least for the purposes of an Article 80 UCMJ prosecution. Do you think it's appropriate or possible to break out this, separate attempt from the underlying offense?
Yes, Your Honor. When we look at Article 80, we have to, Article 80 is going to bring in the elements of 134 via that mechanism. The analysis is that still comes down to the presence, whether it was an attempt because it was a 14-year-old or it was a police officer, it's still the presence element. And Article 80 brings in those elements from 134 for us to analyze.
What's he attempting here? Is he attempting to take indecent liberties? Is he attempting to indecently expose? Or what's he attempting to do here? Since assuming arguendo that physical presence is an element, it is required. What's he attempting to do here?
Attempting to take indecent liberties with what he believes is a 14-year-old. It's an attempt because it's not a 14-year-old.
Okay.
Appellant did admit.
Can it be an attempt? Say it had been a 14-year-old. Would it have been an attempt because physical presence wasn't there?
It would be our position that it's not legally sufficient, Your Honor, because he was not
there. Constitute an attempt under 80.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
It's legally impossible, not just factually impossible. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's why it's charged as an attempt.
You can't attempt to be in the presence of.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Can you attempt to be in the presence of? Is that what you're arguing? That you cannot be. That's not
something. Cannot be in the presence. We first like to direct the court.
Well, counsel, if his intent was to be in her presence, that is, via the telephone conversation and the instant messaging that they had in which he sought to be in her presence, why isn't that sufficient in this case to constitute an attempt?
For the phone calls and the instant messaging, Your Honor?
Phone calls and instant messaging, his first inclination that he communicated to her was to be in her presence. Why is not that phone call, that instant messaging, and the communication over the web camera of the particular picture, why isn't that a sufficient amount of evidence to constitute an attempt to be in her presence?
First, Your Honor, with respect to the communication via telephone and email, it's our position that that's not an attempt to be in her presence. It's an attempt to communicate, which would reflect specifications 2 and 3. As far as
him, did he not say that he wanted to meet with her?
Yes, Your Honor, he did.
Well, why isn't that sufficient then to constitute an attempt to be with her? He's not convicted of being with her. He's convicted of the attempt.
Your Honor, with the attempt, he never took a substantial step towards that. They did have a general conversation about meeting up, and then
so
he said
a general conversation about meeting, a sending of the pictures that are at issue in this case of him committing a particular act of sexual nature. What case would stand for the proposition that that does not constitute a substantial step towards completion of his communicated interest in meeting with her?
I think if we go back to Knowles, it says, and look at the elements, it says must be in the presence of the person.
Knowles has to do not with an attempt in that regard, but the offense of actually being in the presence. My question is not whether he was physically in her presence for purposes of conviction of indecent liberties, but for purposes of the attempt. He said he wanted to be in her presence in the first communication that he had with her. And so when he made that intent known, and when he followed that up with a picture of himself engaging in the sexual act, what case would stand for the proposition that that is not sufficient to constitute an attempt?
Your Honor, we do not have a specific case on that point. Appellant's position is that it was not a substantial step towards that. The generalized conversation, he talked about, you know, could you ditch school? Could I get a hotel room? But beyond that, there was no, hey, let's meet at this time at this place, and this is specifically how we're going to do it. He didn't get in his car to travel between, I guess he was at or around Seymour Johnson to Charlotte, where he believed this girl was. So he wasn't, he never took those affirmative steps towards completing that.
Is this a case of first impression for our court?
Yes, Your Honor.
If it's a case of first impression, what is the most important element of law that we should be looking at, in your view? What is it that you hope we focus on?
It's our hopes that the court would focus on the element C when it says in the presence of this person.
And you think that's more important, for example, than the explanation?
No, Your Honor. What I was going to say, there's a couple areas we can look, and first and foremost, we would ask the court to look at the explanation, because we have the president.
So your answer to the question, the explanation or the elements?
It would be the explanation, Your Honor, of that element.
Are they
element.
Of equal weight?
Actually, it's our opinion that the explanation would have greater weight. It's the president saying, this is what I meant when I said in the presence of the person.
Is it not the president defining
the
elements?
Who said in the presence of the person? The president or Congress?
The explanation is by the president.
No, but what's he explicating? Is he explicating a statute?
No, the elements he promulgated, Your Honor.
Are they of equal weight, the elements and the explanation?
It's our opinion that the explanation is greater weight, should be given greater weight, because the president's explaining this is what
I'm... As a matter of law or as a matter of logic, given what's said?
As a matter of logic, Your Honor.
Is the government bound by the explanation?
What do you mean, the government, sir?
The prosecution. Is the government bound by the explanation of the president?
Your Honor, that's an interesting question. When we look at another source besides the explanation, we look at the bench book instructions as well. And
that's not implemented or drawn up by the president. And
no, Your Honor.
And my question is, I mean, we've had this in other cases. And I'm just interested in getting your reaction as to what the effect of the explanation is on the government who has brought the charge under that manual.
It's our opinion that they are bound by that explanation. In this case, they even with that explanation, this is really an indecent exposure. They mischarge it. The explanation's there.
The short answer is they are bound?
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, in this case, did the government at all challenge the explanation at trial about being in the presence?
Your Honor, trial counsel in this judge alone litigated trial did reference not so much the explanation, but says Your Honor could find a constructive presence.
Right, but he was then adopting the physical presence argument and saying that, in his view, constructive presence would be sufficient to meet physical presence.
Yes, Your Honor.
So my question is the government bound by the law of the case doctrine here? That is, they tried the case under the physical presence theory. Under what circumstance would they be allowed to argue a different theory on appeal?
Would the government be?
Irrespective of the underlying question as to whether the government is bound by the explanatory material in the Manual for Courts Martial for Substantive Offenses. Something that we've said in the past, there are some aspects of the Manual for Courts Martial in which the government is bound, and some aspects are simply illustrative. Irrespective of that particular issue, in a case where the government tries the case at trial under a theory that adopts the president's explanation, is the government then bound by that adoption on appeal by the law of the case doctrine?
Your Honor, it's our view that the government didn't adopt the president's explanation. In that, the trial counsel made the argument of constructive presence. And the word constructive does not appear in the explanation for this offense. We do find that in other areas of the MCM. I mean, if we look at 112A, I understand that, that's in different
articles. Counsel, I may be reading the record differently from you, but my reading of the record is that the government adopted the physical presence argument and then used the constructive presence theory for a way of explaining what the manual meant in the terms of the use of physical presence. But perhaps that's not the case.
Your Honor, I might have misspoke. They did say that we do need to prove in the presence of. I'm not sure if they said physical presence or presence. I believe they said we need to prove that he was in the presence of the person, and then went on to cite Cook and say it could be constructive.
Did the government at trial ever say the president's wrong and physical presence doesn't apply?
No, Your Honor, they did not.
Is it possible for this court to interpret presence as both meaning humanly in the same place or in an internet sense connected through the internet? Are both interpretations legally available to this court, and it's a question of which is the better interpretation?
Yeah, I think both interpretations are available to the court. It's our position that when the element says in the presence of and the explanation says the physical presence of, bits of binary data sent through the internet.
Is it possible to interpret physical presence as meaning something other than humanly in the same place as?
No, Your Honor, it's not our position, no. The explanation says...
You think as a matter of logic that has only one possible meaning once you bring in the qualifier physical?
Correct, Your Honor.
What role, if any, does the rule of lenity play in this case, or should it play in this case?
Your Honor, if I could address that in rebuttal.
Please.
Let me put some thought into that, Your Honor.
You've cited and relied on Knowles. What's your response to the position that the government's taken in this case, that Knowles actually anticipated the circumstance in which we face here? That is, Knowles is a 1965 case. It's before the internet, it's before webcams, before that type of instant communication. It nonetheless, after the court in Knowles made the comment that you cited, that is, a telephone conversation isn't enough, said the court said, but we're not deciding today whether a different result might obtain if through electronic visual means someone communicates a particular image. So here we have a contemporaneous electronic visual depiction from the individual of a sexual nature to a person that, at least for purposes of the charges, is a young woman, and at least for purposes of attempt. Why is that not sufficient in light of Knowles's anticipation?
Your Honor, the court did say we do leave open the question whether the offense can be committed over audio visual, but did not indicate, one way or the other, whether That means, well, yes, we believe if they're, you know, back then perhaps they anticipated someone taking a video and then maybe sending that video there.
So for purposes of the underlying policy that lies behind the rule requiring physical presence, why would not a contemporaneous electronic transmission fulfill the purposes of the rule?
It's our position that it's still, that's not the physical presence. You know, when we're looking at policy and safety concerns, when this is sent over the internet to a television or I guess a computer screen, the recipient can always just turn that off and walk away. You know, when we're looking at policy and concerns of that, you know, it's not in the presence of, you know, a video sent over that. It's just something flying through cyberspace. There's not the concerns of that person can go beyond that and commit it in the presence of that person. The receiving person merely has to turn off the monitor and walk away, and then that image is gone.
Your time is up. You'll have an opportunity on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court. I'm Colonel Roger Bruce. Major Weber and I have the privilege of representing the Air Force today. The Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals properly concluded that appellant's conviction for attempted indecent liberties with a minor was legally sufficient, and this court is urged to affirm the conviction as well. It is the United States' position that this court should determine that the facts of this case logically and properly support an interpretation of the Brown, Knowles, and Scott cases, as well as cases from other jurisdictions, and conclude the conviction is legally sufficient because appellant was physically present.
Counsel, I'll ask you what I ask the appellant. What's he attempting to do here? Is he attempting to commit indecent liberties despite the total lack of any physical presence, or is he attempting to do something else?
He was charged with attempting.
I'm not asking what he was charged with. I'm asking what he was attempting to do here.
He was attempting to commit a sexual act.
Yeah, that's pretty self-evident, but
indeed.
What is he attempting to do as a matter of law?
He's attempting to commit an indecent liberty upon a child. That's what he's
all
attempting
right.
to do.
And what keeps it from being a completed action?
In this case, it was the fact that it turned out to be a 38-year-old
okay.
detective.
Okay, if there had been a 14-year-old on the other end, rather than a 38-year-old detective, it would have been indecent liberties with a child.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Counsel, how do you get around the explanation of the president? In the elements, he said that it must be in the presence of the child. In the explanation, he said he changed that and said it must be in the physical presence. Here, there was no physical presence. Everybody agrees with that. And yet, your job today is to convince us that somehow this constitutes some kind of physical presence. How would you define physical presence?
Well, Your Honor, I would define it by looking at the history of case law from this court, the cases from other jurisdictions. And although we didn't brief this issue, I believe it was the Davis case where this court said that the president establishes the MCM by executive order. The manual includes sections on the elements of proof necessary to make out the offenses. We note that we are not bound by the president's interpretation of the elements of substantive offenses.
But we may not be bound, but is the government bound? Are you bound by what the president has said in the manual when you are set about to prove a case?
We're bound by the elements, Your Honor, absolutely. We must prove the elements beyond a reasonable doubt.
And you are not bound by the president's explanation of those elements?
In order to convict, we must provide proof beyond a reasonable doubt of each and every element.
So is the essence of your argument that that this is a case about presence and forget physical? The debate's not over what the meaning of physical means.
Well, no, Your Honor. I think there's two basic ways to look at this case. I think this court can look at the history of its own case law, the cases of other jurisdictions, and conclude that for purposes of indecent liberties, what this appellant did was sufficient for physical presence. I think that's a fair and logical interpretation.
But I understood your question, your answer to Judge Erdman was, that's great, that's a nice argument in your view, but that's not your primary argument. Your primary argument is you don't get past the elements.
I'm not following you. We don't get past the elements, how, Your Honor?
because you just stop on the element of presence and don't bring in the explanation that includes physical presence.
I see your point.
I'm trying to understand your point, not mine.
Here to suggest that we're backing away from physical presence. I'm here to suggest that the facts of this case show physical presence. If you look at the history of this court's cases, the courts of other jurisdictions.
What source of law would you point to as your most persuasive, or document would you point to for the principle that physical presence in an internet age means visual presence and not literally in the same place as?
Well, Your Honor, I think it requires us to look at multiple cases to come to that conclusion.
Which is your best case? If you're hoping that we're looking at one thing when we're having our conference, what is it that you hope we're looking at?
I don't think you can do that with one case, Your Honor. I would ask you to look at Brown, look at Knowles, look at Scott, look at the case from North Carolina that we cited, McLeese, that has been followed
does
by...
That, McLeese is a different law. We're following... isn't it our job to interpret the manual?
I don't believe that it is different, Your Honor. I think McLeese, the statute in North Carolina is...
Was presence an element in the North Carolina statute?
Absolutely, and the court said so in their finding. They said presence was an element, and they said presence was constructively met in the McLeese case, which was adopted by the...
Was it physical
Circuit.
Presence?
If I may, just a moment, Your Honor. What they said in McLeese, certainly defendant's behavior was such that common sense of society would regard as indecent and improper. Although the defendant was not actually located in the room with his victim, he strategically placed a camera such that she was unaware of its presence, thereby secretly filming the child.
Was the criminal language with presence or physical presence in McLeese?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, could
you repeat? Was the element language in McLeese presence,
with.
Physical presence, or with?
With, but...
But aren't we interpreting the manual and not the North Carolina statute here?
I think they're one and the same, Your Honor, by the way they interpreted it. They required a presence finding and concluded that constructive presence under the law was, in fact, sufficient. In this day and age, based on the technology, it made common sense to that court that that was sufficient presence for indecent liberties.
Okay, so that should constitute a source of law.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Do you understand the difference, which is in a McLeese case, they were interpreting the statutory language, which was the word with, and they did talk about presence in defining that term.
Yes, Your Honor.
For purposes of what we're here to do, we're interpreting presence, not with. Do you see what I'm saying? So you can say that this is something that you can analogize to, that it's persuasive, but it hopefully is not your best case.
I think the word with and presence are not that different, Your Honor. If you commit an act with a child, or if you commit an act in the presence of the child, I don't see that as a great distinction, especially when that court relied upon the word presence in their analysis, and then concluding that constructive presence was good enough under the statute of North Carolina.
But in light of the manual's discussion, which defines presence as physical presence, not constructive presence, I'm not sure how that helps you.
I just don't see the distinction, Your Honor, as being that great between with.
Well, under the North Carolina statute, couldn't a telephone conversation with a child where there was obscene language be with the child, regardless of presence?
I'm not sure that I would read McLeese that far, Your Honor. It certainly wasn't the facts that were presented in that case, and it wasn't the facts that were supported in the Knowles opinion as well. Telephone call was not, in fact, enough.
Does the rule of lenity have a role here?
In terms of statutory interpretation, Your Honor?
Yes, and here we're interpreting the manual provision.
Your Honor, I'm not sure how I want to answer that question. Can I submit something to you supplementally? I'm not sure of the answer. I'll have to be frank with you on that.
Counsel, to recount the drafting history of this provision, the 1951 manual, as I recall, did not use the term physical presence with respect to this offense. Mere presence was the language, or presence was the language. The 1969, the president inserted physical presence in the manual, and it's remained there since then. I don't believe this is a case, but correct me if I'm wrong, like others that we've had in this area, in which the president has changed the manual to incorporate case law from our court, and therefore we could say, well, the president wasn't really trying to bind the government, he was just incorporating what he believed to be the case law in this area. Because unlike the procedural rules where everyone is bound, the government is bound there, this substantive rules, the government may or may not be bound, as others have said. Why did the president, do we know, in 1969 insert the word physical presence in the rule?
Your Honor, I don't think there's anything in the record that clearly answers that question. I can only speculate it would be to ensure that that the government had sufficient proof to convict individuals of conduct of this nature.
And although after the fact legislative history, that is legislative history after the offense, is normally not given great weight, here we have Congress reenacting this manual rule into statutory law, confirming the physical presence requirement for this particular offense. And so, just to nail down where we were before in this discussion, is the government in this case arguing that we should disregard the physical presence requirement, or that we should interpret the physical presence requirement to include a contemporaneous visual depiction?
Your Honor, as I mentioned, I think there's two ways to approach this. Our first point is to interpret it as other courts have. A constructive presence is sufficient in this day and age with the technology that was used in this case. But, Your Honor, this court could also follow the course that the Air Force Court took, which is more narrow, more focused, strictly under the law of attempt, and determine that for purposes of attempt, the presence issue, quite frankly, isn't indispensable in an attempt prosecution. It isn't germane in an attempt prosecution. That's what the Air Force Court concluded in both the Cook and the Miller cases. And I don't find any fault with that. I think the other approach is consistent with this court's pronouncement since 1953 in the Brown case, that the clear policy of the indecent liberty offense is to protect children. And I think guided by that, a broader view, an interpretation that leads to constructive presence.
Counsel, what are the elements? What are the elements of an attempt under Article 80?
They are that the member had the specific intent to commit the underlying offense, that he took an overt act.
He took some action.
That's right. A substantial step towards.
You have a situation where. There's no physical presence. Everybody admits that. So one element is just out of there. How can, in the context of elements being totally missing, he be deemed to have the specific intent to commit an act of indecent liberties with a child?
Well, by his very conduct, Your Honor.
By his very conduct. Well, brings me back to the first question I asked, which is what is he attempting to do here? And how does he have the specific intent to do that?
His specific intent was very well established in this record. It was well established in the sexually explicit comments that he communicated in the instant messaging with his victim. It was very well established in at the time when he put the web camera on his penis and he masturbated to the point of ejaculation before this intended victim. It was established when he got her on the phone because he wanted to hear her voice all at the same time.
Is it charged that way, though, sir?
No,
I mean, it's charged as an attempt, and it's an attempt because the person that he was contacting with was not, in fact, a child. It was an undercover police officer. So all these other things that you're bringing in, how do they help you when they're not, it wasn't charged that way?
Well, no, Your Honor. He was charged with attempting to take indecent liberties with a child by masturbating in front of a camera while transmitting the image via the internet to a person the accused believed to be a female under the age of 16 years.
But it doesn't say anything about phone calls or instant messages or anything like that?
No, Your Honor, it does not. But one of the elements is to prove his specific intent, and the way we do that is by looking at his actual conduct in the case. That's how we prove his specific intent, and that's how we think it was conclusively proven in this case. I don't think there could be any doubt, especially when you look at Prosecution Exhibit Number 9, which is a video of the very sex act that we've been discussing. I don't think we could ever get more conclusive evidence than that. That that was his specific intent.
Well, I think no one in the room would disagree with you that there's conclusive evidence that he had a specific intent to send the video of himself masturbating to someone he thought he was a child.
Yes, Your Honor.
But I'm not sure that everyone would agree with you that specific intent to commit indecent acts with a child. That's the question.
Is that specific intent?
The question is whether he could have that specific intent if it wasn't in the actual presence of the child.
Well, as the Air Force Corps concluded, and I can't find fault with it, that's the underlying offense. We're not required to prove all the elements of the underlying offense. We're required to prove the elements of attempt in order for this conviction to stand. They concluded that in Cook and in Miller.
But specific intent is one of the elements of the offense.
That's right. That's right.
Let me just be clear, since I think you argued, perhaps based on our questioning, three different theories and perhaps then conceded one back. It is the government's view that doing something visually, contemporaneously, visually with the other person over webcam is not merely constructive presence, whatever that means, but it's visual presence, which equals physical presence.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that a fair characterization of your view?
It is, Your Honor.
So you can be physically present through visual, through hearing, or from actually standing next to the person?
Yes, Your Honor.
The government's view?
We've all participated in VTC conferences, and I think we can all fairly conclude that we were present at those meetings just as much as if we were sitting in the room.
But were you physically present? Excuse me. Yeah. Were you physically present?
Based on, we can't ignore today's technology, I think, and conclude otherwise. I believe
so if General Petraeus is briefing the president, and General Petraeus is in Iraq and the president's in the Oval Office and the president leaves and you would say, where was General Petraeus? You would say he was present at the civets, but would he say he was physically present at the civets? The president says, well, General Petraeus was physically at the civets, and you would say, what? Where is he? Or you would say, sure, he was.
I base that argument on the case law of other jurisdictions who have reached this point and said that was sufficient for purposes of the statute.
Thank you.
And in arguing the case law from other jurisdictions, are you arguing that the same statute or the same type of statute was being interpreted in those jurisdictions, or are you arguing that the purpose of the underlying offense in those jurisdictions was fulfilled by a webcam presence, and therefore we should apply the same theory here, even though we may be dealing with different words? Which is it that you're arguing?
Well, Your Honor, all those other statutes had the same language of committing an act with a minor. And it's our position that with and presence should be fairly interpreted as one and the same for purposes of this statute.
I'm having difficulty with the argument, with the position taken by the court below here in terms of the constructive presence. If his intent was to commit an act in violation of the indecent liberties statute, did he not have to have an intent to be in her physical presence? And that physical presence may or may not be met by webcam. But I don't understand the argument of the court below, which seems to be, or the position of the court below, which seems to be, we can disregard the physical presence because he had an intent to do something.
Well, the court below would say, just like this court said in Knowles in 1965, that they would save that case for another day, a case where there's an actual child, they did not address that concept.
But to
go ahead, Judge Ryan.
To constitute an attempt under law, don't you have to have an attempt to commit a specific offense?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may not have to actually complete all the all the elements of that other offense, but you have the intent to do so. So doesn't he have to have an intent to be in her physical presence, whether or not that's actually consummated?
The Air Force Court concluded no, that factual and legal impossibility was not a defense available to this member. So in their view, it was not a requirement.
Not a question of a defense, but a question of fulfilling the elements. They seem to have read the word physical presence out of the statute or out of the rule.
In an attempt case, I think that they said that was not an indispensable element that had to be proved, Your Honor.
What would be an indispensable element? Are there dispensable elements and indispensable? Can one be committed of an offense by simply fulfilling the indispensable elements?
Your Honor, they felt that the indispensable element, the gravamen of the offense, was his specific intent based on his conduct. That's what they felt was the gravamen of
it. Okay, the specific intent is inferred from the conduct, and there you are.
That is what the Air Force Court concluded.
Under what circumstances can we ignore elements of crimes?
Well, in an attempt, we ignore the fact that she was 38 years old.
Except we ignore the fact that she was 38 years old because if the facts were as he believed them to be, which is that she was a child, he would have committed the actual offense. Okay, so there's
Your
a factual
Honor.
Impossibility issue there, which permits us to ignore the fact that that element isn't met for purposes of convicting him of an attempt. But if, as a matter of law, you need to have physical presence, we can't ignore the fact that he didn't intend to be in her physical presence if what happened doesn't constitute physical presence. Do you understand the difference?
I do, Your Honor, but speaking of this particular appellant, he stated in his clemency submission that he was guilty and deserved to be punished for every one of his crimes. In his mind, those elements were in fact met. He never challenged presence at trial. He never challenged in clemency. He admitted that he deserved to be punished for this very crime that we're talking about. So in his mind, in this appellant's mind, under the facts of this case, that element wasn't an issue for this particular
appellant. Well, are clemency petitions legal authority that this court should rely on?
Well, Your Honor, if we're going to assess what he thought, what he believed, I think there's at least some value in taking a look at it, Your Honor.
Your time's expired, but I'll ask a similar question, and that is, for purposes of assessing whether the elements were proved at trial, are we not limited to the record that was placed before the military judge as fact finder at the time he reached his conclusion that there was proof beyond a reasonable doubt? And under those circumstances, are we therefore allowed to look at a clemency submission?
That's a fair point, Your Honor. But I will point out what is in the record is that he did not file a motion. He never challenged this in any part of his litigated court-martial. This was a fairly contested case, and not once did he ever challenge the presence question.
And along the same lines, in footnote 3 on page 18 of your brief, you suggest that if this is legally insufficient, he can be convicted of the lesser-included offense of attempted indecent acts with another. Was he on fair notice that that was a lesser-included offense upon which he could now be convicted? At trial, we don't have judge's instructions in a judge-alone trial. So placed him on notice that he, on appeal, would be liable to a conviction for the lesser-included offense of indecent act?
It would seem the pleading itself put him on fair notice, Your Honor.
And what would be your view with respect to if we do find him, and I'm not suggesting we will, but if we do find him guilty of the lesser-included offense, what would be your view as to whether a sentence reassessment would be needed in this case or whether we could affirm on the basis of the remaining findings? You've asked for the lesser included offense. What do we do if you get your wish?
I think the sentence should stand as adjudged and approved by the convening authority. He was treated very fairly by the judge, who stated on the record that he showed some leniency because he eventually did cease contact. So I think that would be an appropriate sentence, Your Honor.
If you wish, you may briefly conclude.
Whether this court follows its own history of indecent liberties cases and the cases from other jurisdictions, or the more narrow approach of the Air Force Court in Cook and in Miller, the result should be the same. Considering the light, in most considering the evidence in a light most favorable to the prosecution, drawing every reasonable inference in favor of the prosecution, as required in this case, this court should find each element was in fact met beyond a reasonable doubt and affirm the conviction.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Does the defense have rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Judge Baker, as well, on the levity issue.
Lenity?
Lenity, thank you very much. I'm going to need to supplement that as well. It's something that we haven't considered. And I don't want to shoot from the hip. I don't have a good answer for you, sir, and I'd like to look into that if I may.
Absent a request from the court, it will be up to the parties to file a motion if they wish to file something supplementary.
Yes, Your Honor. Chief Judge Efron, you asked about the, in 1969, the word physical actually appearing. And if we look at the analysis of contents of manual for the 1969 revised edition, physical presence of the child is put in there, and then it cites U.S. v. Knowles. It's our position that case prompted this analysis in 1969. It cites right to U.S. v. Knowles.
Would you address footnote 18 in the government's brief and advise the court as to whether, under these facts, in your view, your client could be convicted of the lesser included offense, or a lesser included offense could be affirmed on appeal?
Your Honor, it's our position that he could not be convicted of this LIO because the underlying offense is legally insufficient. So therefore, he could not be found of the LIO of indecent acts.
I'm not sure I follow that argument. What case stands for the proposition that when a greater offense is found to be legally insufficient, a lesser offense cannot be affirmed?
Yeah, I do not have a case on that.
Okay. So why shouldn't we go ahead and if you're correct and physical presence requires being in the same room and the offense of attempted indecent acts doesn't require being in the same room, why wasn't he on full notice by the charge in this case and the identification of lesser included offenses as a matter of law that he could be convicted and a conviction could be affirmed on appeal of a lesser offense by doing what he did in this case?
Your Honor, we will agree that the MCM, it does list the LIO of indecent acts.
So the very manual that you're relying on for physical presence also says, by the way, if you're not physically present, you can be convicted of indecent acts. So if we can affirm an offense of indecent acts on appeal, do you agree with the government that we could also affirm the sentence in this case? And if not, under what circumstances would the offenses of which he would stand convicted, including the lesser offense, require something other than an affirmance of the sentence on appeal?
Your Honor, we would agree that you could affirm the sentence from the underlying court, that this court does have that power.
Not a question of whether we have the power, but is there any reason why we shouldn't do so in this case?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Counsel, just a real quick question. I don't think you said it in your brief. Did you consider the case United States versus Rodriguez-Rivera?
No, we did not, Your Honor.
Okay, you might want to look at it, 63 MJ 372.
Yes, Your Honor. If there be no questions, may I sum up?
You may.
Appellant's convictions of attempted indecent liberties with a child is legally insufficient. Because the specification is legally insufficient, we ask this honorable court to set aside the specification. And we would ask the case to be remanded for a rehearing on sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is now submitted. After the clerk adjourns the court, the judges will remain here for an informal question and answer session. That now concludes our formal court proceeding.